evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, December 4th, 2017. Church leaders speak out about the revitalization forum.
If you realize, when this peace agreement was signed in Addis Ababa, right from day one, the two parties disagree. What is new?
And authorities in Khartoum have confiscated copies of Al-Tayar newspapers for 8 straight days.
This is a punishment. It's not just a confiscation for the newspaper. My newspaper is Al-Tayar in Arabic. Al-Tayar means in English, mainstream. We have been in business for 8 years till now.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Archbishop of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, Daniel Bull Deng, says he believes the revitalization process will collapse just like the 2015 peace agreement did. Religious leaders in South Sudan say while they appreciate the efforts of the international community, slapping sanctions on people who block the road to peace will not bring stability in South Sudan. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Archbishop Daniel Deng says even though both the IGAD and the TRUCA have been helpful to South Sudan, they are also part of the problem. He says sanctions will not bring peace in the country.
So I feel that something more than what they are talking is to be done. So I want to advise my dear elder who are in America, UK, your stick will not work, but you convince them with your good way of doing things. Because if you... Where is Riek Machar now? Riek Machar has been confined somewhere. Okay, Taban is now leading the other one. Which one is now are we talking? Which revitalization are we talking? So we are confused.
Bull says renegotiating the peace and imposing conditions on the parties will not help.
Whether you are making a very strong statement now or not, it doesn't help. What I see is that all of us, the UK, the American, the Norway, anybody else in the AU, we have to come down and sit with all these people, find out what is going on. If you realize, when this peace agreement was signed in Addis Ababa, right from day one, the two parties disagree. What is new?
The head of the Anglican Church says the international media also should be blamed for setting up a troubled picture of the war in South Sudan. He says the problem was within SPLM party, which he says has made things more complicated.
So I'm not happy with the international media, which is spreading this issue, and then it has become a politic of the day. Until we correct this, you will not get peace. We need to bring all this tribe together and say, you are a nation. Please sit down and make a decision how to carry out this country.
Father Santino Morokomomo of the Catholic Church and the chaplain at the Catholic University in Wau says the people of South Sudan need a genuine peace which comes without any condition.
People need to address the root cause of the problem which is affecting us, like the problem of tribalism, the struggle for power, position, and so forth. The state's problem which are affecting the people, because the innocent are the ones facing the high price of what is now taking place.
Father James Oyet is the Secretary General for the South Sudan Council of Churches. He says the people of South Sudan need the help of TRUCA.
Any help that brings good to the people of South Sudan, we welcome it. That help that can stop the guns, that help that can stop all the fears in our hearts. We want to drive from here to Nimule with that convoy. We want to drive from here through Yirol, Alwakluak, Rumbek, to Wau, to the extreme north of South Sudan with that convoy. We want to go freely. The South Sudan we want, we have to achieve it. It's a South Sudan of peace, it's a South Sudan of reconciliation, it's a South Sudan of forgiveness. That's the South Sudan we're looking for. So let all efforts that, if it is revitalizing to stop the war, welcome. Let all efforts, if it is revitalizing to stop the killing, let it come. Efforts to revitalize the peace agreement that stops rape, let it come. That stops hunger, let it come.
The church leaders also say peace negotiations should involve the people of South Sudan and that it should address the root causes of the conflict. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Authorities in the Sudanese capital Khartoum have prevented Al-Tayar newspaper from going into circulation for the past 8 straight days. Osman Margani is the managing editor of the paper. He says security operatives in Khartoum are targeting his newspaper because of its editorial position. He says he has lost a lot of money from advertisement.
This is a punishment. It's not just a confiscation for the newspaper. My newspaper is Al-Tayyar in Arabic. Al-Tayyar means in English mainstream. We have been in business for 8 years till now.
And what kind of stories have you been publishing of late, or have you been working on of late that might have angered the authorities? Could you tell us some of the stories that you have worked on?
Actually, it's normal stories about the political scene, trying to make analysis, political analysis for what is going in Sudan in particular. And sometimes we print investigative reports about stories about corruption. What we are doing right now is not different from what we have been doing for the last 8 years.
You say the authorities have not spoken to you, they have not told you why security is preventing your papers from circulation. Could there be a certain political issue that you're following that has angered the government?
No. I think, because we asked them so many times, during the 8 days, why you are doing that? Is there a particular article that you are you have to tell us exactly this is the reason for this confiscation? But they didn't say anything. They didn't tell us. They didn't put their finger in any article that this is the article which we mean. This is just a punishment for the newspaper, for our editorial policies, because they are not happy with our editorial policies. They do think that we are trying to raise the awareness of people.
And what is the topical issue in Sudan today or from last week? What are the issues that everybody is talking about?
Most probably political issues, like, for example, last week there was a clash between the government and some militia in Darfur, a very famous tribal figure. His name is Musa Hilal. And the government managed to capture him and brought him to Khartoum. That was the main thing what most of the people they were talking about last week.
Why would the government be annoyed if Musa Hilal is captured? I thought the government was happy that they captured Musa Hilal. If your paper was printing anything on that, why would they be annoyed?
They do think that sometimes when you talk about this issue, they tell you this is a security issue, this is a national security issue. You should not comment on that. You should not even try to mention anything that's positive to on favor of Mr. Hilal. We didn't print anything that may be considered as on the favor of Mr. Hilal. But still, we do think that the government is trying to tell us that you are always trying to oppose the government and try to raise some issues that may be harming to the national security.
And tell us a little bit about the impact of this censorship on your business. You know,
it has a very direct and very serious action, because the industry of journalism in Sudan is not a very strong industry. It is very sensitive to the financial issues. And what they are trying to do now is just to make us lose as much as we can money, to the extent that we cannot run our business in a very normal way. We are circulating around 30,000 issues per day. Actually, I can estimate the total loss every day around 100,000 Sudanese pounds every day.
And how much is that in dollars? How much is that in dollars?
It's because, you know, the Sudanese pound is very weak. It's almost 6,000 or $7,000 every day.
That was Osman Al-Margani, the managing editor of the Tayar newspaper. He was speaking with me from Khartoum earlier today. The Chemical Weapons Convention, Arms Control Treaty that outlaws the production, stockpiling and use of chemical weapons, will add South Sudan to its list of member states. South Sudan is currently an observer, but will become a signatory after Parliament ratifies the move later this month. South Sudan's Director General for International Cooperation, Moses Akol, says Becoming a member state will help international efforts to prohibit the use of chemical weapons.
We live in a very dangerous world and also in a very dangerous neighborhood. So maybe the outcome, or maybe there's nothing that can accrue to South Sudan in the region of, I mean, for the foreseeable future, but it's a preventive measure, more or less, and also a part of a joint effort by the international community to ban and outlaw the use of chemical weapons. As we all of us know, they're still in use in places like, you know, Iraq and Syria and so forth. And we really want to make sure, we want to make a statement as a young country that we are part of the international community and we don't condone the use of such destructive weapons.
Ambassador Cole, some might argue that becoming a member state is a simple formality. What's your reaction to that?
I don't see any formality. Some years to come, you never know, I could see a possibility of war in the region developing into or degenerating into a war that will use weapons like chemical weapons. And I think we will be remiss if we don't try to stop the eventuality of the usage of such a destructive weapon right now.
How much money will it cost the government to be a part of the convention?
The fees is really very, very small. I think it's even cheaper than joining some other regional organizations here.
Do you have a dollar amount?
I don't have a dollar amount right now because we're still, and by the way, I want to correct the impression that we have already joined. As you correctly said, we're still observers, and until this process is concluded, and until by the time, the ball is rolling in the parliament, a lot of information will come forward.
So what comes next after the parliament ratifies it? What are the responsibilities of the South Sudan government once the ball gets rolling, as you say?
Well, after that, we will be full members. We have responsibilities to make sure that we do not develop chemical weapons. We also join the international community in the campaign. I need to make it very clear, again, that not all the members of the OPCW are always good guys. Some of them, although they have joined up and they have signed up to the treaty, but some of them still peddle chemical weapons. So it's our responsibility to be part of the campaign or the group that makes sure that people live up to their expectations. We are a post-conflict country, although we still have our own conflict inside there. But as a post-conflict country, you cannot be out of the woods in just 6 or 7 years. There's always eventuality of getting into any kind of conflict and so on and so forth, whether it's within our country or with a neighbor and so forth. And we want to make sure that whatever happens, if diplomacy fails, then chemical weapons should not be an option at all.
That was Ambassador Moses Akol, South Sudan's Director General for International Cooperation, speaking to Ian Bior from Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan government vows to use drones to fight criminal activities in Juba Town. Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you react when you fail?
I just take it easy and I pray for my chance to come again. I calm down my heart.
Well, I feel I'm down, but it gives me the strength to work harder or to get another enterprise. If I fail in some line, I achieve that one, then I look for another opportunity.
Not so bad, but I take it as a stepping stone to something bigger. So I don't cry. However, I don't rejoice as much. I just relax and then think of where I made the mistakes and other things and then push myself up.
People don't enjoy failure, but it all helps and motivates and keeps me going, because if I fail, I learn a lot from that and I don't want to repeat that. So anytime I fail, I realize and I go back and correct the mistake that I did.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government has launched a project to use drones and cameras to boost security in the capital ahead of festivity seasons. President Salva Kiir says the drones will be used to track down criminals and to protect citizens and their property. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
An official with the Israeli company Global Group, which supplies the drones and cameras being used in Juba, demonstrated before President Salva Kiir and others how the drones work at the Bullock Police Headquarters. A computer program is used to launch the drone, which flies like a small plane. The drone is directed to a specific location, scans the area, and sends information back to its operator, which includes images that appear on a large screen in the control room. It shows all activity and all the people in the area of the drone. Speaking at the launch, President Kiir said two surveillance drones and security cameras are being installed around central Juba to help keep the area safe.
By introducing the program of the smart city, it will be safe for everybody residing in Juba or visiting Juba. All the planes at the airport will be safe. Everybody can be screened wherever he or she is going. Those who snatch things from the hands of the women on the streets can now be traced. They cannot get away with the crime.
Five police motorbikes are also equipped with radio sets, which officers will use to respond to criminal activity. Major General Edward Dimitri, Director for Information Technology, Emergency Response and Security Cameras at the Interior Ministry, told the South Sudan in Focus the new drones will help police track down carjackers and burglars in residential areas of central Juba, including High Amarat, the State House, Tongping, Juba International Airport, Munuki, Gudele, Rock City, Jebel and Konyokonyo, and other areas. But Dimitri says there is one big challenge.
So our challenges is many, but the main one is we have the big challenge how to manage or to sustain this system, because there are so many challenges. As you know, the country is in crisis, and we have raised this to the leadership, and I hope it will be solved, because the system will depend on the sustainability of it to continue working.
54 police officers are being trained to man the drones and the cameras. Dimitri says the government will eventually increase that number to 150 for Juba. Dimitri declined to say exactly how much the drones and the security cameras cost, but says the government spent millions of dollars. The Global Group's Phil Silda says the drones can zoom in and out and are able to identify the faces of criminals and the numbers on vehicle or motorbike license plates.
The people can coordinate with the people in the field and tell them, okay, look, this, let's say you have any crime and there is a suspect is running, so the drone, like from a helicopter, he can see inside.
Dimitri says after the drones are fully operational in Juba, the government will install similar services in Wau Town. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on security matters, since 2009, Boko Haram has waged a violent insurgence in the Lake Chad Basin, claiming more than 20,000 lives and forcing around 2 million people to flee their homes. The group's rise and resilience is a major threat to security and stability in the region. But what happens to those who leave the terrorist group? The United Nations is working with the governments of Cameroon, Nigeria, and Chad to reintegrate and rehabilitate former Boko Haram fighters and those held captives by the group. The move is already facing resistance in some corners. Muki Edwin Kinzeka visited Kolofata in northern Cameroon and filed this report.
200 women and children said to be ex-Boko Haram militants are in a makeshift camp here at Kolofata on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. The women say most of them were captured and kept in the Sambisa forest, where they served as cooks and were subjected to rape and sexual slavery. They were eventually forced to join Boko Haram as fighters, spies, and suicide bombers. Their sons were trained to fight, and daughters became suicide bombers. Among the ex-militants is Maimuni Aji, a 34-year-old mother of three. She says they were saved from Boko Haram training camps after troops from Cameroon, Chad, and Nigeria, operating under a multinational joint task force, attacked Sambisa for 3 consecutive weeks in May 2017. She lost her remaining daughter in the attack. 2 others went as suicide bombers and have never returned. Aji says she returned home, hoping to find peace, but instead met violence from people who consider the returnees Boko Haram militants. She says her nightmare is not over. She says if she had not gone to buy food 2 weeks ago, she would have been killed in the fire that burned her house. She says she is left with nothing but a copy of her identity card that proves that she is a citizen of her village. Boko Haram forcibly recruited thousands of youths in Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger in its effort to create an Islamic state in West Africa. Muhammad Jamil, president of Nigerian Muslim Youths, says communities should accept the returning fighters and stop stigmatization, which may make them more radical. He says the military should also stop persecuting them as if they were still fighters.
The law enforcement agents are using excessive force on these people, such that even the innocent citizens have been killed alongside the militants, and that is giving the innocent citizen the thinking that the government is not for us, is against us, and now they lend more support to the extremists, give them cover. So we should reduce the force that we use in containing this. Dialogue, inclusive dialogue, is what will solve this, and not force.
Villagers say the ex-fighters and captives may be returning with Boko Haram ideology or be spies. Mohammed Chambers, the UN Special Representative in West Africa, says the worries of the population are legitimate. But Chambers says Cameroon, Nigeria, and Chad should promote de-radicalization centers to help reintegrate the former fighters and victims.
They have succeeded in pushing Boko Haram back. So on that security front, there has been good success, and we all commend the military efforts that have been taken. At the same time, let us address issues of governance, of bringing on board women and youth to tackle the root causes of violent extremism in Central Africa, in West Africa, in the Sahel.
Cameroon and the UN have been distributing seeds, goats, sheep and pigs to the returnees and asking their communities to welcome them. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Kolofata.
From Cameroon, we move to Zimbabwe, where Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has sworn in his cabinet, which is packed with ruling party loyalists and military men. It is their takeover that helped oust former president Robert Mugabe. Mnangagwa is calling for the country to unite. He says his top priority is to revive Zimbabwe's battered economy. Sebastian Mofu is in Harare with this report.
Mnangagwa, President of the Republic of Zimbabwe.
Members of Zimbabwe's cabinet took the oath of office Monday to work under the new President Emmerson Mnangagwa. It is the first time in Zimbabwe's 37-year history, the oath is not being led by Robert Mugabe. The 75-year-old Mnangagwa answered some questions following the ceremony.
A new cabinet just to finish the term of the former president, which is a period of between 6 to 7 months. It has been hectic, but I believe that with my team, we will stand to the challenge. That I want them united, we must grow our economy.
Mnangagwa took power last month in a military-led coup after the 93-year-old Mugabe fired him as vice president. The new president has not indicated if he will seek a fresh term in elections expected by middle of next year. A few meters from the State House, street vendor Vengai Muhawa commented about the new cabinet. He says he hopes the government addresses the problem of cash shortages at banks instead of relying on plastic money, and he said it must create jobs. He says street vendors want to be chased by employers so that we get off the streets. Next to him is another street vendor, Silas Mawera. He says the composition of the new cabinet is okay, and Zimbabweans are expecting it to quickly address the economy so vendors do not have to remain in the streets. Besides attending to the economy, Zimbabwe's new president must unite his own ZANU-PF party, which was divided for years over who should succeed Mugabe. Many party members begged Mnangagwa, but others supported Mugabe's wife, Grace. The Mugabes have been granted immunity from prosecution and remain in Zimbabwe, living as private citizens. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Don't Say No by Dynamic. Listening to Dynamic with the song Don't Say No. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to know what you think about our show. You can drop us an email at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on the Facebook. Our Facebook page is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.